Hoopball Podcast listeners, are you a fantasy expert and want to write or podcast for Hoopball? Do you have aspirations of covering a team? Are you a master of sales and want to earn some cash on the phones? Well, we've got good news. Hoopball's recruiting. If you think you have what it takes, hit us up at Hoopball Fantasy on Twitter or by emailing teamhoopball at hoop-ball.com. Again, that's at Hoopball Fantasy on Twitter or emailing teamhoopball at hoop-ball.com.
And welcome into the latest edition of the Sacramento Kings podcast, presented by Hoopball and the Hoopball Podcast Network. I'm your host, Damian Barling. I'm so happy that you are here with us, dropping a little weekend edition of the Sacramento Kings podcast. And why not? There's so much pertaining to the Sacramento Kings to talk about. Just in the last few days, De'Aaron Fox has sprained his ankle again. We have learned that Harrison Barnes is not yet in Orlando. He's still going through COVID-19 protocols. Here in Sacramento, he was the fourth of four Kings players to test positive for COVID-19. We've learned that Alex Lynn, I believe, just arrived in Orlando, and he's going through the COVID-19 protocols to join the team during their practice. Rashawn Holmes is still on house arrest for crossing the gun line. He's got a few more days of that. And oh, by the way, in the midst of all of this, we have our first basketball game. We have like our first real live basketball game with uniforms and all coming up in just a couple of days. Coming up on Wednesday, the Sacramento Kings are going to take on the Miami Heat. And by the grace of everything, it all goes smoothly. There'll be no hiccups between now and the 22nd. And we'll have some live basketball to talk about with the Kings and the Miami Heat. And I think once we get to Wednesday, we get into a rhythm, man. We start having games coming up every couple of days, and then we'll be this Thursday, we will be 1 week away from the start of the NBA season, or the start of the restart of the NBA season. I'm happy to be joined today by Sanjay Singh. He's one of the many talented writers over at the Kings Herald. We're going to bring him in here in just a heartbeat. Want to remind you, if you want to check out what I do on a daily, you can check out the podcast with Damian Barling that is available here on this very same podcast platform that you're listening to this show on. We just launched the Be Heard podcast platform. We'll talk about that at the end of the show, but there's so much to talk about as it pertains to the Sacramento Kings, and I want to bring Sanjay Singh in now. Sanjay, let's do this. De'Aaron is going to be out for the next little while. We know he's going to be reevaluated in 7 to 10 days. Harrison Barnes has not cleared protocol to join the team in Orlando yet. Really no telling how long that'll take. And even once he gets to Orlando, there's a procedure that he's got to follow. So with the first game, the first like real game, the first game that counts, the first of the 8 games, about a week and a half away, I'll ask you this. De'Aaron or Harrison, you can have one of them, just one of them, for the entire 8-game stretch. Which one are you going to take?
Oh, that is a tough question. Only can pick one of them?
You can only pick one. Now, that doesn't say that the other one's not going to play at all. It says that they're not going to be available for the entire 8-game stretch. You get one of those two players to be available for the entire 8-game stretch.
I'm going to take De'Aaron Fox. It's a lot of back and forth between the two, and one of the things I'm looking at is how the Kings are going to struggle without Harrison Barnes, because the depth is very shallow behind him. But De'Aaron Fox is what makes this team run. The Kings need to rely on their pace more often in Orlando than they did in the regular season.
Yeah,
and you can't do that without your star point guard. Simple as that.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
If you don't have.
You struggled with the question a lot. Like I thought you would fly out with De'Aaron Fox, but I'm glad that you labeled it that way, because so much of the offense centers around De'Aaron, but I feel like so much of everything else, Harrison Barnes kind of holds together.
Yeah, I agree. Both offensively and defensively, the Kings just need his length on both ends, as well as his length in small ball lineups to really, be successful in both ends.
You brought up a great point about the pace of the offense, and this is something a lot of Kings fans have talked about, because we've yearned for the pace of the past, if you will, that Dave Joerger did, which feels like an eternity ago here at this point. but I'm pretty sure it was just last season, though memory has gotten completely foggy since March 11th. We've talked about, maybe this could be a situation, and I think we talked about it here on the last podcast, is this could be an all-out sprint for eight games where we see, you know, the fastest team in the league back at it, and you have, you know, Luke Walton spending, you know, practices over the course of the next couple of weeks just getting guys' legs underneath them and getting them to run and doing that whole deal. And then now you realize, okay, De'Aaron's hurt, which is problematic for anything that the Kings want to do. Harrison Barnes isn't even in Orlando yet. I think Alex Lynn just got there, but he's probably going through the quarantine period. Rashawn Holmes is grounded for crossing the gun line. It's like this whole process has been snake bitten before it's even started.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the options you have now are pretty limited because behind Fox is Corey Joseph. He's not as fast. You still have hope with Bagley at center because he can rim run. But behind, you know, Bagley, you just have currently Harry Giles, who's been getting the reps at center, and he's not as fast. So that brings you some, you know, half court possibilities, but the options are very thin right now for Walton. So he's going to have to be very creative with how he, you know, utilizes their strengths right now.
You mentioned that you would go with De'Aaron and Harrison would be the one that would miss games if you had to pick one or the other. Who would you start in place of Harrison Barnes?
I think what Walton is doing is Bazemore, and I kind of agree with that because I would much rather prefer Bazemore be your energy guy off the bench. But with the current situation, you kind of do need Bazemore to come into the starting role and be the be the veteran guy that Barnes provides to the starting lineup. You know, keep everybody in check, make sure they're not making mistakes, provide offense. You know, he shoots a very high 38% from three, I believe it is. And he's also very versatile in defense. He doesn't have the same length that Barnes does, but he still brings the same intensity. And he's not going to, you know, replicate Barnes' production as a starter, but you definitely need him in the lineup right now compared to what other options they have.
I think, again, because it feels like an eternity ago and we've sort of lost concept of time over the course of the last several months, Kent Bazemore was playing really, really well as a Sacramento King.
Yeah, really, really good. I was very impressed with him because his numbers have been very, like, fluctuating the last few seasons. He's trying to find his form, and he found it in Sacramento ever since the trade for Trevor Ariza. And it's been a pleasant surprise, and I really love watching the way he plays. I never thought that, you know, Bazemore would probably be one of my favorite players to watch this season for the Kings, but here we are, you know?
It's been a strange year, bro. a strange year when you can give the nod to, yeah, Kent Bazemore has turned into one of my favorite Sacramento Kings. Okay, so let's play with the what, and I know this is, you know, kind of fun scenarios that we just throw around as Kings fans and the whole deal, but in all likelihood, I think the more likely scenario is actually that De'Aaron isn't back for the start of the season. Now, reevaluating is such a, it's such a term that I think tricks people in that, okay, De'Aaron Fox is back to 7 to 10 days. Like, no, it means a doctor is going to look at him again in 7 to 10 days. And maybe at that point, they'll make a determination on when he can come back. Or maybe at that point, they'll say he's going to be reevaluated in another 7 to 10 days. And if they wind up getting that line, you could probably wrap a whole lot of this up. But the more likely scenario in my mind is that De'Aaron isn't available at least for the very beginning. And if he isn't available, or if he is available, he's not going to be, I don't think he's going to be close to 100%. So let's play a scenario where it's De'Aaron Fox who's out rather than Harrison Barnes. Who do you start in his position?
I think I go with Corey Joseph, and I know that's what the Kings did earlier when, you know, Fox sprained the same left ankle in November, and what they did was they replaced him with Corey Joseph, slowed down the pace. So I think you might have to give that a try because it did work early on. They did beat some really good teams. They did also lose to some very strange teams, but it worked. And if they can try to replicate that success and play to people's strengths without relying on pace right now, then that could be something to, you know, hold on to while De'Aaron Fox is still resting up.
What do you think happens with Bagley in Orlando? I know that's one of the before we found out Harrison Barnes wasn't there, before De'Aaron's ankle got him, before Rashawn Holmes crossed the gun line, the big conversation was, well, what's Marvin Bagley's role going to be? Now, that may have changed because of, you know, some of the X factors that we just laid out right there. But what do you think we see from Marvin Bagley? And what do you think Luke Walton's approach will be as these eight games get closer and closer?
I think we're probably going to see Bagley playing hefty minutes, maybe in the upwards of, or maybe like 20 to 25 would be something I wouldn't be surprised to see. He's probably going to definitely get time at center because he said, you know, he got up 10 pounds and he's, you know, looking forward to playing that position. And that's what I want to see out of him. I want to see if he can show that he can play center, hang with the bigger guys, the bigger defensive guys, show he can help protect the rim, show he can stretch the floor on offense. I know he's been working on the three ball a lot because this season has been disappointing for him. And as an 18% shooter this season, it's definitely a number you can, you know, improve with work. And I know he hasn't played in over 4 months, but this is Marvin Bagley's chance to shine in what has been a very bummer season for him. And so I think he brings it.
And that's a... I wonder if he has, like, nothing to lose in this scenario. You know what I mean? Because everybody is under this weird... It's a weird circumstance that nobody's ever dealt with before. Like, this is hopefully, by the grace of God, a once-in-a-lifetime thing that these guys and all of us will have to deal with. And so if he comes out and he stinks, you know, everyone's going to be like, well, okay, it's difficult to make a determination here. But if he comes out and he's white hot, it's like, oh, okay, now there's some momentum carried into next year, and now maybe we get a glimpse of the player that we wanted, you know, all the way back in game one, way, 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 way back in game number one when he got hurt against, I think it was against Phoenix, and then he wound up missing a big chunk of time, obviously comes back, and then there's the horrible fact. You're a stat guy. I feel like, did they not win a game with Marvin Bagley in the lineup, or was it like some awful record where they were like 1-13 or 14, or it was just some awful record with Marvin Bagley in the lineup?
I may be wrong, but I vaguely remember the winning number being zero.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I thought it was.
It just wasn't good. But there is a lot of other factors that play into it, but it just wasn't good.
I'm looking. You posted this. I saw you post this the other day. It made me laugh. So I'll ask you the question that Google asked you: is Harrison Barnes good?
I was laughing so hard when I saw that, and you know, good is capitalized too. Is Harrison Barnes good? But
is he good or is he good?
I really want to know, is he good or is he good?
Yeah.
And he is good. But I feel like it does go under the radar because of the price tag he is under. You know, 4 years, $88 million. People want you to, you know, be putting up 20 points a game, be putting up 7 rebounds, put up 8 assists to go along with that. But Barnes isn't necessarily asked to put up big numbers. He's just more of an elite complementary role player to the guys that teams want to be stars. And he's done a good job of that. So my answer to that would be, yeah, Harrison Barnes is good, and he needs to be in Orlando for the Kings to have a chance to.
Yeah, you're not going to get I don't think you're going to get an argument from – you're not certainly not going to get an argument from me. I don't think you're going to get an argument with any Kings fan about whether he needs to be in Orlando for the Kings to have a chance. But I think Harrison is one of those guys who's – they're like a victim of their contracts. You instead of just looking at him as a player and what he brings to the different lineups that he's in, you look at what he's getting paid, and then you automatically you look at players who are getting paid something similar, and you go, well, Harrison Barnes isn't that good. And we do that all the time. We do that in football, but it's a really prevalent conversation in basketball where money is a little bit more free flowing than it is in other sports. And Harrison is always one of those guys who, I feel like he's always been good. Like, he was never a bad player, but because of the amount of money that he's been paid throughout his career, it becomes one of those, ugh, he's not even good.
Yeah, and it's weird because, you know, in Dallas, they asked him to do a lot of isolation plays, score as a creator, but that just didn't play to his strength. And his numbers, you know, when they initially traded for him, or when the Kings initially traded for him back last year with Justin Jackson and Zach Randolph. But when you look back at that deal, the Kings, you know, definitely hit a home run on that one, because one of the things the Kings have struggled on in recent years is acquiring a high-level small forward. Ever since Rudy Gay left, the Kings have been very thin at that position. And when you get a guy like Barnes to produce the way he has and play the role he has, you really can't go wrong with that. And he only gave up Justin Jackson essentially for him because Zach Randolph doesn't even play anymore.
And he's such a great glue guy. Like, we talked about that a few minutes ago. He does such a great job both on the offensive end and the defensive end of kind of holding, you know, whatever the game plan that the coach, he's like a coach on the court, one, but he holds everything together on both sides of the floor. He seems like a guy you'd die to have on your team.
Exactly. Yeah. Every team needs a guy like Harrison Barnes. As much as people don't really see that, the more you dive into the game, the more you see how important Harrison Barnes is, because he's just really good. And man, it's a reality I don't want to see if the Kings have to play without him in Orlando.
Yeah, that's not something any of us want to see. Of course, his health is what matters the most in all of this. Eight seasons, Sanjay, eight seasons for Harrison Barnes. The most money that he has made is this year, $24.1 million. What do you think Harrison Barnes' career earnings are? Eight seasons, highest year was this year, $24 million.
Is it his career earnings?
Earnings to date.
Is it between the 40s and 50s?
Oh, 40 to 50. No, it is way higher.
80?
$106.8 million. He has made north of $20 million ever since 2016-17 with the Dallas Mavericks. And by the time his current contract is over, he will have netted he will have earned $167.6 million through his contract in the NBA. That's why people hate on him right there. I'm telling you, that's the exact reason. If Harrison Barnes made $12 million, it would never be a conversation as to how good Harrison Barnes is. But because he makes $22, $23, $24 million, suddenly it's a big conversation of how good he is. $106.8 million. Career earnings, career salary is one of my favorite games to play because it's always, no matter what you think, it always comes out to some shocking number because you don't do it with people. You don't do career earnings with Kobe Bryant. Like, you know, it's some astronomical figure and you don't think about it. But when you throw a career earnings game for like a Harrison Barnes, it gets fun because, yeah, dude's made some money. He's signed some pretty good contracts. Dallas believed in him. And, you know, I don't know what caused them to bail on him. They decided to go in a different direction. We obviously knew what was going on in Golden State, so not really a big deal there. But I'm glad that the Kings believe in him. I think he's going to work for the Kings. I think he's an important, you know, piece for the Kings. It would be nice for the Kings to have a guy with some tenure. You know what I mean? Like a player. Like, oh, this player's been around for 8 years. There aren't any players on the roster that have been around for more than a handful of years. Harrison Barnes would be the perfect guy for that. I would love to see Harrison Barnes see the end of this contract and just be the guy that De'Aaron grows around and Bagley and like teach. You know, he's one of those guys. I think he's a leader on the floor and he's a leader in the locker room.
Exactly. And one of the funny things about Harrison Barnes' age is that he's the same age as Buddy Hield and Bogdan Bogdanovic, two players that haven't been in the league as long as him, but they're all 27 years old.
Dude, that is wild. That is absolutely wild. Buddy's looking around like, hey, you know this dude made $106 million in his career. Can a brother just get a contract extension here? You know, you bring up another a name there in Bogdan Bogdanovic, which was another conversation that we have had throughout the last few weeks, particularly since the realization of what next season looks like. And although next season hasn't come clearly into focus, Adam Silver has made it clear for months there's going to have to be a reduction in salary cap. And, you know, as we learned on a recent episode with Aaron Brewski here on the Hoopball podcast, that the salary cap reduction, thankfully, doesn't pertain to just the Sacramento Kings. It's going to pertain to every team in the league. But I did wonder how a reduction in salary cap would affect the Sacramento Kings re-signing Bogdan Bogdanovic. I imagine he's going to have some suitors out there. What do you have an idea or a guess as to what a top number from an opposing team might be to try to acquire Bogdan Bogdanovic this offseason?
If a team with good money, say like the Atlanta Hawks, who have a ton of money to spend, I don't know how that number is going to change now, but if a team has enough money, I can see somebody offering him like in the upwards of 17 to 20 mil to, you know, get him. Mm-hmm. Bogey is very talented. He's not the best defender, but he is very creative on offense. And for a team like Atlanta to partner, imagine a partnership between Bogey and Trae Young. That is something that a lot of people would want to see. And Atlanta has the money to do so. But the Kings have the leverage, you know, retain him. And so the Kings must do everything they can to keep somebody like Bogey, because he's arguably the Kings' second best playmaker behind De'Aaron Fox. And if you lose that, then the playmaking becomes very thin. And I don't know if there's another option out there in the free agency market that can replicate what Bogey brings to the Kings.
Do you think Bogey gets better than what he, like, do you think that we, like, what we see from Bogdan Bogdanović right now is what he is as a basketball player, or do you think that he gets any better?
I think there's a chance he gets better. One of the reasons why I don't think he has is because he's always playing basketball year-round, whether it's in Sacramento or whether it's for Serbia internationally. He doesn't really take any breaks, and that has really affected his body because he's often getting injured, and that affects his inconsistency sometimes. And this coronavirus, you know, hiatus has given him the chance to rest for multiple months, and that's something he hasn't had since he's entered the NBA. And because of that, we could potentially see a much improved Bogey coming out in the restart. And ideally, we want to see FIBA Bogey. Some of the, you know, best times Bogey has played basketball is during the FIBA World Cup, where he absolutely lit it up for Serbia in the summer last season. And if we can see Bogey replicate that with the Kings, that is going to be very positive news for them.
That's a great point that you bring up that I hadn't thought of, that this is the longest stretch he's gone without playing basketball probably in years. I hadn't really thought of that. So if he comes out, I wonder what the effect of that might be, because, you know, if we play the hypothetical game, which we've been doing here for almost a half hour, if we play the hypothetical game and, you know, he comes out and he lights the whole, you know, whole party up, is there any chance that he stops playing year round and focuses on just the NBA? And obviously next year is going to be a little weird. You know, we may or may not have the Olympics, and there's, you know, I wouldn't ask him to pass on that, but anything else after that, I wonder if it's like, hey, look what you did after 4 months off. Look what you did with an actual off season. Look what you did when you actually had the opportunity, one, to rest, two, to practice and get better at some things, and look what you were able to do. I wonder if that that'll have any weight on his thinking. Again, this year is going to be a little weird because of the possibility of the Olympics in 2021, but perhaps that's something that the Kings keep their eye on moving forward, especially if they're going to sign him to a long-term contract this offseason.
Exactly. And if Bogey, you know, does produce really well, produces better than his numbers right now, there's a possibility that, you know, his value goes even up. And we know that, you know, NBA players want to capitalize on as much money as they can get, you know, whenever they can get that opportunity. And if Bogey, this is his chance right now, if he can produce at a very high level, then he can, you know, get a big bag with the Kings. And that's just going to be very good for him no matter what.
I think he's really good. Sorry to interrupt you. I think he's really good. I've never believed he was going to get better. And I don't mean that like that it's bad. I mean, he's good now, and he's a really, really good basketball player. I've never had the belief that he's going to be anything different than what we've already seen. And maybe that's partly because of what you just said. Maybe that's partly because he's playing year round, and part of what people miss when someone is, like, someone is injured, for example, and someone like tears an ACL, or, you know, there's so much talk, you know, this off season about, or, you know, the real off season about Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson and ACL tears and Achilles tears and all of that, is you're spending your entire time rehabbing and you're not spending time working on the game. You're not spending time working on, okay, what are my deficiencies out there on an NBA basketball floor? What do I have to do to be better in this regard or in that regard? You're spending time trying to get this little tiny tendon, you know, just above your foot healthy. You know, you're trying to get that strong so you can walk again. And you know, when you miss an off season, you miss the ability to train and you miss the ability to get your game better. And that's such a fantastic point that you made a minute ago that I'm so hung up on, is that he doesn't have the time to do any of that stuff. He just goes from one to the other to the other. And we oftentimes, when we look at, oh, the more basketball, the better. Well, sometimes that's not necessarily the case. Sometimes you need time to sit back and reflect and say, hey, you know, what can I do here that's better? I mean, he was battling, again, I'm sorry, time is so murky. Was it the beginning of this season that he was battling an injury and he just couldn't get into a groove? Or that might have been the beginning of last season. Again, I can't really remember, but at the beginning of one of the two seasons, he was dealing with an injury and he couldn't, it just felt like he couldn't get into a flow. And everyone was like, what's wrong with Bogey? What's wrong with Bogey?
I think that was last season, right?
Where, like, I can't remember, man. Last season was like 7 years ago.
I get that. I think because I remember him coming back against the Toronto Raptors and he did bring that creativity right out of the gate, but his shot was very shaky. And so far this season, his shot has also been pretty shaky. You know, one of the things that I think he can definitely improve on is his 3-point shooting, because this season he's only shot 36%, but based on previous seasons and based on the way Bogey can light it up at any instant, he is much higher than a 36% type of guy.
Yeah.
And he needs that rest. And I can't wait to see how he can produce given the rest that he's gotten because of this coronavirus.
Yeah, you're right. It was the beginning of last season. What do you read? What, or let me rephrase this question. What do you read into the switch of Bogdan Bogdanovic going to the starting lineup and Buddy Hield going to the bench? Why do you think that it seemed to click so well for the Kings when that happened?
I think ball movement kind of has a play in that, mainly because when you move the ball to Buddy Hield, you're ideally looking for him to shoot right away, just because his main strength is a sharpshooter, rather than having Buddy pass, because he's not a very good passer. But with Bogey, he's always looking to set other people up in whatever way he can. Or he's also the guy that can benefit on dribble drives and, you know, kick it out to somebody. And his strengths play much better with De'Aaron Fox than Buddy Hield does. I mean, because Buddy Hield and De'Aaron Fox definitely work, but the creativity between Fox and Bogey opens up everything else for the other three players on the court with them. And so because of that, the ball movement is much more fluent. You get better looks. Everybody gets the share of the ball. And I think that's probably one of the main reasons why, you know, the switch worked. And then Buddy brings the scoring off the bench. So it's a win-win for both sides.
It's so amazing that we're talking about the Kings legitimately having a shot to at least, you know, they're at least in the conversation for that play-in scenario, most likely, against the Memphis Grizzlies. And this is a team that has had losing streaks of 5-8-6 all in this season. When they lost 8 games, I didn't think they were ever going to win again. Like, it was just such a terrible stretch of basketball earlier this year where they were losing and losing and losing. It was like, this basketball team is never, ever, ever going to win again. The sky was falling. There were articles from Sam Amick about group text messages with Vivek and Luke and Vlade and Matina, and it was just like, oh my God, this is Sacramento. Like, this is the epitome of Sacramento Kings basketball. Yet here we are coming off a, you know, 4-month hiatus because of a global pandemic, and we're looking at a situation where this is amazing, because I feel like this could only happen to the Kings. They're missing all sorts of players. They haven't had one complete practice with all of their players yet. And, oh, by the way, their first game out of the gate is essentially a must-win, because they're going against a team that has basically phoned it in.
Yeah, the opening game is very important for everybody. And the Spurs are already sitting at the front court. So it would be so, if the Kings are able to get the 8th seed away from the Grizzlies and the Pelicans, who I think are the main challenger for that. I'm just going to point to 2020, because 2020 has been crazy. And if the Kings end their 13-year playoff streak in 2020 with a global pandemic causing a 4-month break and all the adversity they've already gone through, and they haven't even played a scrimmage game yet, then it's going to, man, and there's no fans in attendance. All of these factors playing into it, and the Kings make the playoffs, it's just going to be one crazy, crazy ride, because they're 28-36 and they have a shot at it. And
I'm just going to love the day that we could talk about, yeah, the Kings made the playoffs the year Rashawn Holmes crossed an imaginary boundary to pick up his Postmates order. If that doesn't encompass the 2020 sports world in a nutshell, I don't know what does. You brought up the Pelicans. You know, in a week of craziness, it does and it doesn't have to do with the Kings. We should point out Zion Williamson has left Orlando. The protocols for returning are, I don't know if strict is the right word, but they're just that. They are extremely strict and they're rigid, and it requires a whole lot of negative COVID-19 tests. So the timing is important as well. Obviously, we all know we've got scrimmage games coming up here in just a matter of days, and with the Pelicans set to play on the very first night on July 30th, that's kind of, you got to kind of start working backwards here at this point and figure out, okay, for Zion Williamson to play on June 30th against, I think it's the Utah Jazz, he has to be back. He's got to be back in Orlando within the next couple of days, or it won't happen. So, that's another kind of unique dynamic in this whole Orlando metaphorical bubble thing that we're dealing with in the NBA.
Yeah, it's a funny similarity between Zion and the Pelicans and Fox and the Kings, because both teams need those two players available. Otherwise, they become completely different teams, because with Zion and the Pelicans, Zion didn't play for much of the early parts of the season, and the Pelicans did not look so good without him there. Yeah. I know they have Lonzo Ball, they had Brandon Ingram that were growing together, but they need Zion to, to finish the puzzle. And it's the same thing with Fox. With Fox out, the Kings were a completely different team. Buddy Hield grew in different ways. Bogey grew in different ways. But at the end of the day, Fox is what makes the team click. Zion is what makes the Pelicans click. Both teams are different without, both teams are much weaker without those two. And now both teams are looking at a reality where they could be playing without those two. So how does each team combat that? Because every game is crucial. You can't, afford to lose your opening day game, and that goes for both teams.
And as much talk as there has been, and I feel like a jerk when I do stuff like that, so let me point out, the number one concern with Zion Williamson is whatever family issue that he dealt with. Mm-hmm. Basketball is very secondary, just as with Harrison Barnes' health, basketball is very secondary. Obviously, we're covering it from a basketball perspective, but we're not insensitive jerks either. As much as the Ringer likes to troll Sacramento Kings fans, I think really what we're talking about, the three teams that the eighth spot should boil down to, is Memphis, New Orleans, and Sacramento. I don't feel like Portland wants to be there. I mean, Dame Lillard spoke out against this on multiple occasions. So did CJ McCollum before, the protocol was announced. Now, obviously, they went through it. Who knows, what the PR ramifications would have been if they didn't. And I know Dame Lillard has a tremendous love for Terry Stotts. He has a tremendous love for Portland. But I don't feel like those guys are all in on this. I feel like the Pelicans are. The Pelicans would love that high-profile matchup against the Los Angeles Lakers in the first round of the playoffs. They know the storylines that'll be there. They'll know they'll get the marquee games. And Kings, obviously, as we outlined a few minutes ago, they're fighting history here at this point and, trying to put an end to this drought. But and then there's, oh, by the way, Memphis, the team that has the best 65-game sample size of the other three, and so much was made about who had the easiest schedule before the pandemic and who had the most difficult schedule before the pandemic. But Memphis had put together the most consistent amount of basketball, and to the best of my knowledge, that team hasn't changed. All their studs are still there. So for me, it's Grizzlies, it's Pelicans, and it's the Kings fighting for that ninth and eighth spot in that potential play-in matchup there at the end of the eight games.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think the Portland Trail Blazers could be an interesting team to keep a lookout for, because I know they were like the one team that voted for not returning or something like that. But when they're fully healthy, they are a playoff team. And I know that the Grizzlies do have, that 3.5 game advantage, I believe it is. So that gives them a really good cushion. And every to make a single mistake, because if the Grizzlies are winning and then one of these three teams lose the game, then you're not really everything changes for you, because now you have to fight even harder. And I think the Grizzlies probably do hold on to the eighth seed. It's just a matter of who can challenge them as a ninth seed for the play-in game. But I think you should keep a lookout for Portland, because when they're fully healthy, they're probably the most ideal matchup to the Lakers with Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum. If they have, you know, Jokic back and healthy, Zach Collins back and healthy, that's going to be an interesting team. They're kind of weak at small forward position, but you can never count out Damian Lillard.
Oh,
that guy is
for sure. I mean, my hierarchy of NBA guys is Russell Westbrook, Kemba Walker, and Dame Lillard. I mean, those are my three favorite players in the league, and I don't want to count Portland out. I didn't mean to come across like that. Let me rephrase it. I question whether they're engaged in this process. You mentioned them voting, you know, no for the return. The way it was framed is that they voted no because they thought there were better options out there than the one that we're getting now. I have no idea what those options were, but Dame Lillard was clear. He said, I'm not going to come back unless we have a legitimate chance to compete for the playoffs. There would be there's no point in coming back. And so I don't know. I waited all year for Portland to make that run. And there was a stretch where Dame was averaging like 48 points a game or something absolutely absurd over a short stretch, but they weren't winning. Like, it never clicked for them. I kept waiting for that team to make the run, similar to San Antonio. I kept waiting for San Antonio to make the run. It never came for either of them. For San Antonio, it's not coming, and they've all but made that perfectly clear by who is and who isn't going to Orlando. I'm waiting for Popovich to opt out. I'm waiting for the alert that comes in when Woj, hashtag free Woj, is in effect and he gets off his suspension. I feel like his first tweet's going to be, yeah, Pop said the hell with this. I'm out. And he's going to let, you know, Becky Hammon or Tim Duncan coach or something. Like, I don't know. And lost in all of this, I don't think they have a real shot to make the playoffs. But Monty Williams, he wants to get those young guys playing. I don't think Monty Williams is looking at – of course, I don't believe he'll say this publicly either. I don't think he's looking at competing for, you know, the ninth spot in play-ins, despite the fact that they're not that much further out of it than the other teams. But he's looking to get his team like, hey, we need to carry some momentum into next season, because next season isn't that far away. Let's get some games under our belt. Let's get together. Let's play. Let's show these guys what the Phoenix Suns are going to be next year. We'll add our draft pick. We'll get some more time together. That's the type of coach I think that Monty Williams is. And I think he's going to be able to get a lot out of his players. I don't know what it's going to amount to, but if you talk about a team potentially playing spoiler in all of this, it may very well be the Phoenix Suns.
And when you started off the season, you know, the Suns came out strong too, with a backcourt of Devin Booker and Ricky Rubio that were surprisingly, you know, very good together. And they eventually lost their magic and they started, you know, tumbling downwards. But now this is another team that we have to look out for, because they've also benefited from the 4 months of rest just as everybody else. And if they can recover the form that they had in the beginning of the season when everybody was healthy, it's going to be fun, because I don't think the Suns have a legit shot, but teams like the Suns and the Spurs could ideally play the spoiler for the teams that are trying to make that spot, AKA the Grizzlies and the Pelicans and the Kings. But yeah, the Suns are definitely going to be one to keep an eye on. You know, Aaron Baines is another guy that has really improved his game this season, and these guys are going to want to take down some of these people, like, you know, trying to compete for the 8th seed. Maybe the Kings are somebody that, I mean, not the Kings, the Spurs. On opening day against the Kings, they can play spoiler, because the Spurs have a lot of young guys that want to develop, you know, guys like Lonnie Walker. And if they can snatch away, you know, the Kings' chances right away by beating them on opening day, then that's going to be a good confidence builder for Popovich's guys. So it's all things to keep an eye out for right now. Everything is open field.
How distant does that first part of the 2020 season feel? I'm glad you asked. DeAndre Ayton served a PED suspension this year. You rarely hear the term NBA player served PED suspension, and it was the former number one overall draft pick. And it feels like that is the least wild story that has come out of the NBA this season. A former number one draft pick getting suspended for PED use. That doesn't even crack the top 10.
Yeah, I don't think it does either. No.
I mean, Kobe died this year, for God's sakes. Anybody remember that? Like, David Stern, poor David Stern. Does anybody remember that David Stern passed away this year? This has been the worst No, we all know it's been the worst year ever. It's been the worst NBA season ever. China happened like in October and people like forget about that. This just Adam Silver is going to look back at 2020 like, let's just burn everything from October to, you know, I wonder if the 2021 season actually begins in 2021. I wonder if it begins in January or right around maybe December 25th or so. But yeah, man, this has been something. Final thoughts, man, before we let you go. So happy that you joined us, Sanji. This was a great conversation. Any thoughts on Harry Giles? He's obviously a player that Kings fans are rooting for. They're concerned about. They're concerned he's going to be in a different uniform next year. He will almost certainly be in a different uniform this year or next year. Excuse me. What do you think we see from Harry Giles during this stretch in Orlando?
The one thing I want to see with Harry Giles, it kind of falls on De'Aaron Fox being healthy or not. But if Fox is not there, and Walton has to dumb down the offense a little bit and not rely on pace, you go into half court sets. And one of the things that stands out about Harry Giles is that in the half court, he opens up the game with his ability to pass in the high post, and his ability to split defenders, to find cutters heading to the basket, to read defenses is very underrated. And he needs the minutes and, you know, just the on-court time and the chemistry to develop with players to show that he can be a king in the long run. But tough because the Kings didn't, you know, accept or pick up his option. So that's, you know, a factor out of his control. But if Giles can show in whatever 10 to 15 minutes a game that he can play, then he's going to be another person to look out for because he brings a different vibe to this offense that is fresh.
Sanjay Singh, Kings Herald. We appreciate you, man. Thanks for joining us today. This was fun.
Thanks for having me, man.
Great perspective there from Sanjay. What a weird couple of days it has been. What a weird stretch it's been for the Kings between the, you know, Rashawn Holmes stuff, Harrison Barnes, you know, not having left Sacramento. And then, of course, you follow that up with the De'Aaron Fox injury. We're all trying to figure out how Bagley plays into this. It's such a, it feels like the most Sacramento Kings thing possible, where we're just days away from the first basketball we have seen since early March. Even though it's a scrimmage game, it's still the first live basketball we have seen in months. And here we are, we're falling all over ourselves like, wait a minute, why does it feel like this is going so south already? It's because it is, and it wouldn't be the Kings if things weren't going south. But we appreciate you so much for tuning in. As always, we appreciate your support here of the Hoopball Podcast Network. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast, rate the podcast, review the podcast, do all of that great stuff. Check out our brand new Be Heard platform. Hopefully you saw something about that floating around on social media. We've launched a brand new platform here for some of the younger talent in and around Sacramento. And it's just what the name says. We want to create an opportunity for some of these individuals to be heard. You could follow us at Be Heard Platform on Twitter. Same exact account name at Be Heard Platform on Instagram. Happy to have Deuce and Mo a part of that platform as well. Want to thank Aaron Brewski and the Hoopball Podcast Network for all of their support in the launch of that Be Heard platform. So go check us out there. Make sure you check out the Daily Podcast with Damian Bartling, available here on the same podcast platform that you are listening to this one on. And man, we've got basketball to talk about this week. Like real basketball. We are going to, hold on, knock on wood. I don't know that my desk is real wood, but I'm going to knock on it, whether even it's fake wood or not. We're going to be talking about a real basketball game this week. So hopefully this podcast got your appetite wet for that. Make sure you join us Monday on the podcast with Damian Bartling. Have a great weekend. And we'll see you next time here on the Sacramento Kings Podcast, presented by the Hoopball Podcast Network.